There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The My Baby and Me podcast in association with Nook.
Hi, this is Jane Garvey, and this is the My Baby and Me podcast. Now, throughout the series, we're discussing a different aspect of pregnancy, parenthood, and in particular today, life with your baby, or indeed, life away from your baby, if you decide when the baby is old enough to go back to work. What we're very much about is the attitude that we're here by mums, for mums. We're not about giving you expert advice because we're not experts, but we are people who've been through parenthood, particularly the early months, which linger in your mind, trust me, decades after they actually took place. Ian McIntosh is here, a writer and a broadcaster, father of a three-year-old daughter, and Beverly Turner's here too, co-founder of the Blooming Bunch antenatal course, also author of a weekly column about all things family for the Daily Telegraph. And that's handy because you're a bit of a... You are keen on babies, aren't you? And talking about babies.
Am I keen on babies? Yes, I do. I like a baby.
I don't mean constantly, but you've got plenty to say on the subject.
I have, but yeah. I think I'm probably more keen on women. So I'm quite keen on women having a better experience. As much as I like a baby, I think women, you know, need a lot of support.
And Katie Thompson knows all about that. She's the deputy manager of Coconuts Nursery in North London. Good to see you, Katie.
Hi.
Actually, you probably have to spend quite a bit of time comforting, I'm guessing, mainly mums at the nursery gates.
That's definitely part of the job.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not just looking after the children. It's very much looking after the parents as well, who are sometimes suffering more than the children.
Well, it's not just, I know it's not just the mums that do drop off, but those very early occasions when it may be the first time you've been away from your child, they're quite difficult to handle, aren't they?
Yeah, and I do have a lot of sympathy for mothers when they leave their baby for the first time and the baby's crying and they're crying. I can see why they feel quite guilty about it. But a lot of the time, once the child's settled in, even if they cry in the mornings, the minute mum's gone, they're busy doing other things, tears have gone.
Is that actually true, or is that just something
it's
to the mothers?
So you can tell you're a mother because you're suspicious.
Yeah, I know, I don't mean to be. I trust you completely. Well, you mentioned the G word, guilt.
Yes.
I've got to say, I certainly don't feel it now, but I have done. Beverly, what about you?
I didn't know what guilt meant until I had children. I genuinely didn't feel guilty about anything in my life, and I'd done things that were not, you know, morally okay, but I still felt all right.
That's for another podcast. I'd like to do that one as well, please.
Anyway. But as soon as I had a baby, I totally understood the concept of guilt. I think, and because I was freelance and self-employed then, as I am now, it's very difficult because if you're with the baby, I felt guilty I wasn't working, and if I was working, I felt guilty that I wasn't with the baby. And having spent a long time trying to get this sort of fun career that was diverse and different, suddenly I was very envious of people who had normal jobs, who had a set amount of maternity leave, because they could luxuriate in their baby for 6 months, a year, knowing they had a proper job to go back to.
I'm only speaking for myself here, but I wanted to go back to work because work I could do, and I didn't always feel I could do
totally
motherhood.
And work is easier than being a parent. I completely believe that. It is so much easier to go out to work, almost regardless of what your job is. And, I mean, you know, the very little things of... You can have a coffee and you don't have to put it on a high shelf. There were these small things about being in a workplace that were the space in your head that you have at work that you don't have if you're at home with a child.
Is it harder if actually you really enjoy your job and you know you're relatively competent at it, you enjoy going in, you like the people you're with, and the alternative to all that is probably the tedium, and let's face it, some of it is tedious, of walking the streets, going
totally
to the park.
Totally. And I think for number one as well, I was this sort of seething mass of resentment that I had made this child with my partner and we had similar earnings, similarly exciting jobs. And suddenly I was at home with a baby that I didn't know if I was doing the right things with, and he was out being fabulous. And I found that really difficult because I was completely naive about the fact that it would be my responsibility to have...
Did he understand that?
Did he understand it? No, he probably understands it now 11 years later, having hammered it home to him time and time again. He didn't really understand it at the time, no.
Do you understand what we're getting at, Ian? You're a man.
Yeah, well, we had a different situation because my wife actually went back to work after about, I think, 6 months. And with me working freelance and working from home, I was very much the stay-at-home dad. So I recognise an awful lot of what you've just said, Beverly. I'm a football journalist, which is a job I think most people are who like football are quite envious of. Mm. But I used to have open fantasies about being an accountant. Just so that I couldn't do it at home and then I'd have an office to go to. Yeah. I would sit for hours imagining how wonderful it would be to be a chartered accountant.
It's not too late.
No, live the dream, live the dream. But my wife and I, we had a conversation, you know, we talked about what it was that we both wanted to do. She's very passionate about her career. She didn't want to give it up. We actually, when we moved back down to London, when my daughter was about 18 months, the plan was that I would work all the time and that she would help my daughter settle into a life in London after being brought up in the northeast. But on the first day we were down, she got an amazing job offer. And so instantly, you know, we had the conversation, everything was turned around and she went to work and I was a stay-at-home dad again. It's just whatever works for you, whatever works for the partnership.
I think I know what Beverly's getting at in that sense of James was able to go out, James, your husband, go out and carry on being fabulous. You were then simply somebody's mum. Yeah. I suspect, Ian, that because not that many men do the staying-at-home thing, you weren't treated... in quite the same way. You had a bit of novelty status around your neck of the woods, didn't you? I bet you did.
Yeah, you walk past any perfume counter with a baby on a weekday and heads just start to turn. Yeah. Women are cooing at you. It's kind of like being a rock star.
Had you ever felt more attractive?
Small baby. No, definitely not.
I remember, I can poignantly remember going to meetings with when our baby was kind of under 6 months, and I was writing a book at the time and I had kind of 3 months to do it, and I pushed myself probably a bit too hard on reflection. But I would go into meetings and I would not mention the fact that I just had a baby. I was so frightened to be seen as someone who's a bit of a part-time, a new mum, not taking it seriously, blah, blah, blah. On one occasion, James and I had meetings that clashed and we didn't have any childcare at the time. And he said, well, I'll take him with me. And I remember him coming back from this meeting and he'd gone in with the baby in one of those holder things, sat him in the middle of the table. Everyone had said how wonderful he was for having taken the baby. Look at this dad, isn't he great? And I was just furious.
Seething,
because I wouldn't have been treated the same way. I mean, this is 10 years ago, so it's slightly different now, maybe.
I don't know. Well, it'd be interesting to see how different it is. I'm sure people will tell us. Economic realities are such that actually an enormous number of parents, men and women, mothers and fathers, have just got to go back to work. Particularly, I mean, if you're living in London, you're trying to pay your rent, pay your mortgage, it's cloud cuckoo land to say that one of you can stay at home. So that's a very different set of circumstances, though, certainly from yours, Beverly. I know you'd accept that, wouldn't you?
A completely different set of circumstances. And I would find it very, very difficult to go out of the house at 8 o'clock in the morning and come back at 6 o'clock at night. You know, my sister works for incredibly long hours working in television production, and I sort of don't know how she does it. And she finds it quite difficult, but she's also very good at her job and she's worked for many years to become quite senior in that position. So, and her husband is a policeman, so she can't be at home and her husband go to work because of, like you say, they live in London, they have a lovely house and they have a good quality of life. And that's the choice that they've made. I would find that quite hard. Having said that, I don't have to work necessarily. My husband far out earns what I do, but I want to work because I want to have that sense of identity. And I would be miserable if I didn't do something that used my brain in a way, you know, that for me, motherhood doesn't stimulate my brain in that way.
What are the options then? You can go to a nursery, the sort of nursery that Katie runs. And how, in your experience, Katie, how seriously do parents approach a nursery? How many conversations do they have with you about what you can provide for the child, that sort of thing?
Quite a few.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. What we do is we invite them for like an open morning, and that's on a Saturday morning when the children aren't there and they can come and have a look at the provision and that sort of thing. And generally they have lots and lots and lots of questions then. Quite a few lists. If it's a dad on his own, he's usually been given a list by the mum, which he has to go through and tick off.
What kind of things are on the list?
Oh, just anything and everything, really.
Gluten-free snacks.
Gluten-free snacks, and what do they play with throughout the day? How often do they go out? Do you have language classes? Just anything and everything, really.
But there's no doubt in your mind that people are not taking this decision lightly, on the whole.
Not at all. Yeah. And then once they are offered a place, generally they'll want to come back. It's like buying a house. They want to come back for a second look when the children are in the setting. And that's fair enough. They want to see kind of how it works. And then finally, if that doesn't persuade them, they bring their child along to the nursery.
So nursery is one option. Other possibilities, I suppose, are getting somebody to come to the house if you can afford a nanny. But again, I mean, this is something that is out of reach of the vast, vast majority of people.
It is. Although I think, interestingly, if you've got more than one child at nursery, having a nanny, and I still hate the word because it just sounds so Victorian, doesn't it? Having a nanny can be more cost effective than actually being in a nursery. So I think the ease of having somebody to come to your house in the morning, the kids can be in their pyjamas, you've got yourself ready for work, you can go out the door. And also I think it's quite nice for the children, especially little ones, to be at home during the day if you can afford it. I'm not saying nurseries aren't brilliant, and my son went to a nursery, my littlest is at a nursery now. You know, that gives them a different sort of stimulus for their day, I think. Although, interestingly, I was talking to my 11-year-old the other day about the nursery that he'd gone to when he was about one, that I'd given myself such a hard time about sending him to. It wasn't the most luxurious one in the area. I sort of thought, this will knock the corners off him. It was a bit tough. And I said to him the other day about, do you remember being at this nursery? And he went, no. And he has no recollection. He has no recollection whatsoever. And I gave myself such a hard time about it. And he doesn't remember it.
Comfort yourself with the thought Junior won't remember a thing.
Yeah, they won't.
Great. I'm not sure that's really the best approach, but it's a comfort.
Some comfort in there because you realise how silly, in a way, I look back and think, God, I was so silly that I was beating myself up about it and feeling so guilty. And now, actually, when they're 10, 11, 12, that's when they need you more. This is the stuff they're going to remember when they get older.
What about mixing it up? I've definitely been through these phases where I've had some days when I've been on my own at home with the children when they were little, and then another day we might have someone come in, and then it might be a grandparent, and another day they might go to a nursery. Can you tell, actually, are the kids, I know it's difficult to generalise, but are the kids who come every day of the week more secure and more content than any of the other kids, or doesn't it work that way?
I couldn't really tell you whether it's being
so
a nursery 5 days a week or 3 days
go.
A week. Most of our parents do choose to have their child in nursery for 2 or 3 days a week, and then maybe mum's at home with them one day, dad's at home with another, and another with a nanny. So most parents do choose to mix it up a bit.
Because it's cheaper.
Yeah, or maybe they've got help from gran and granddad. I think that really helps a lot as well financially. So most of our parents do mix it up.
At Nook, we believe our job is to make your life easier. For over 60 years, we've been listening to midwives, doctors, dentists, and most importantly, parents. Only by listening have we been able to deliver a range of products that is specifically designed to satisfy the needs of mother and baby in those precious early years. To find out more about the full range of Nook products, visit our website at www.nook.co.uk. Nook. Understanding life.
The help from grandparents, brilliant when it works, but it comes with its own multi-layered areas of complication, does it not?
It does. There's a certain amount of politics at play.
You're telling me, Ian.
Yeah,
but go on.
obviously, the issue of payment soon arises because you can't expect to get 2, 3, 4 days a week of childcare for free, and it seems like the fair thing to do. But you have to have that discussion right at the beginning. The worst thing you can do is not have the discussion and then find yourself 6 weeks later with frozen looks across the kitchen table at the handover.
If you meant Frozen the DVD, we'll be watching that, obviously.
We'll have a whole episode on Frozen the DVD if my daughter was in charge of this. But it can be wonderful as well. You know, it gives them a great bond with their family.
It's difficult because I think the average age of a woman becoming a grandmother in England and Wales now is 49. Now, that is 49. I am 50 and I am not ready to be a grandmother. And I am actually not ready, frankly, to give up my professional life to look after small children. So it's a big ask. Why would we dump this on our mums, actually?
It is a huge ask. I mean, I'm incredibly lucky because my mum was a stay-at-home mum and has always worked with children and in various voluntary capacities. And she loves nothing more than coming and picking up my three children and sweeping them away to her house for the weekend. That makes me incredibly...
You are so lucky.
Can I borrow her?
That is what all of my friends say to me. I want a Nana Joyce because she is amazing with the children. Of course, I don't always take that. I take it for granted. And I will snap at her because she's let them watch too much video or, you know... And it's awful, but you still do it with your own mum sometimes. You can still... But having said that, I'm incredibly grateful. She is pretty amazing.
Yeah, but you argue with her, you say about screen time. Anything else?
No, sometimes, you know, I think like a lot of grandmas do, they cite passive-aggressive suggestions of things you might want to do differently.
Actually, I do want to be a grandmother, I've just realised. Yeah,
you know, the sort of, sometimes it's almost what they don't say than what they say. So if you say, oh, I think he's going to give up his swimming lessons, or, oh... And you can tell in the moment there's a slight judgment of, you're letting him give up something else? He doesn't stick at anything, does he? You know, that slight sort of... But, you know, I think we always say on our antenatal course, basically, if anybody offers you help, take it. They may not do it perfectly. They may not look after your children in the way that you might want them to every single time. But actually, if it buys you a little bit of peace and quiet, then accept those offers of help.
Yeah, and they have every right to establish a relationship and a close one with their grandchildren as well.
Yeah, very much so. And I also think often grandparents want to do the right thing, but they need some very clear instructions. So if it is a case of, would you mind awfully if you take him to the park while I have a shower? They will often go, lovely, I can do that. That's really, they feel happy that they're being given clear instructions. I think if you all just hope it's going to be okay, it often isn't.
Grandparents then are brilliant, but come with their own complications. The nursery, I can see why people go for it, because sometimes actually having somebody to come into your house can feel a bit intrusive. And that's one person you've got to 1,000,000,000% trust to be in a good mood every day with your lovely child. Yeah. Whereas at a nursery, there's a much more collegiate feel to it. You've got a group of people working with small children. I would imagine it's easier. I would imagine more people would go for the nursery. But, I mean, I'm not getting at you, Katie, or your nursery, but it is £82 a day for a child under three at your nursery.
It is. Yes, it is. And that is expensive, but it's a 10-hour day. So that's £8.20 an hour. And they get all their meals. And you've got to think about the nursery environment. It is built, set up, designed completely for children. So, okay, say if you've got a nanny, they might take the children to the park on a couple of occasions for a few hours. At the nursery, it's almost like a park in the outdoor area. And maybe if you've got a nanny at home, maybe there's not an area in your home where they can make as much noise as they like. Maybe there isn't an area where they can get absolutely messy, cover themselves in mud and explore with paint and that sort of thing.
All for £8.20 an hour. Yeah.
Exactly. And
but that is a colossal hit on somebody earning the average salary. I mean, that is nearly £2,000 a month.
Yeah. There are much cheaper nurseries. And also there's government funding as well for two-year-olds and for three-year-olds.
Would you send your own child to Coconuts? I know you don't have children at the moment, but would you be happy sending your child to a place like that?
Well, it'd be very convenient.
But what about the fact that you don't have kids at the moment and the impact of being around quite small people your entire working week? I mean, does it make you really excited about the possibility of being a parent, or would you like to run a mile?
Kind of neither, really. I think I get my kind of fill of the joy and the laughter of children every day that a lot of people don't. And maybe that's why they're very keen to have children. So maybe that's why I'm less keen to have children, because I have so much fun with them all day long. But then equally, when I get in at 6 o'clock, I don't really want to see a baby. I'd quite like to see a glass of wine.
Right. Well, I think most of us probably round the table can share that. I mean, sometimes, particularly actually in the early weeks and months of parenthood, it is impossible to remember that it was having fun in the first place that got you into this situation. And relationships are, there's no doubt, they are really, really tested by parenthood, sometimes fatally tested by parenthood, if we're honest. And I wonder, I mean, Beverly, all this stuff now we get talk about date nights and trying to spend time together and stuff. What do you think? Does it work?
I think when before you have children, you see your partner as just this individual who you admire and are attracted to, etc. As soon as you have a baby, you just start viewing them through the lens of being a parent. And there are so many ways that they can let you down on an hourly basis. You let each other down, actually.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I think we see it even with new mums in terms of if you take breastfeeding. So the mum might want to breastfeed. The dad may not support her to do so. Then she wants to stop breastfeeding and he wants her to carry on. And suddenly you've got this competitive minefield of who is right, who is going to raise the child in the right way. The pressure is enormous. And then throw into that, obviously, sleep deprivation, the lack of who am I, my identity, and also just the practicalities. So why haven't you emptied the nappy bin when I asked you to? Why do I even have to ask you to? Why do I think of it and you don't think of it? You've got all of these extra pressures, whereas you used to just be these two individuals going along life quite happily, and suddenly, bang, you're something completely different to each other.
So the solution is to go to the cinema once a fortnight together.
It's so not the solution,
no,
though, is it?
No, it isn't.
Because whenever we've tried to do that, we've just fall asleep. So we've spent 20, we've spent 50 quid to go and have a nap. Yeah. Whereas actually, if we'd just stayed at home and gone to bed early, that probably would have been just as productive. It's very difficult to find time for your relationship. I know people say it's what you have to do. I have no doubt it is, but it's almost impossible.
Ian, date nights.
Me and my wife have actually made it work, and we had to, because there were stages in our relationship where it was getting like, not only were we just co-workers, but we were working in an office that we didn't like, doing a job we didn't want to do, and we were never, ever allowed to leave. Which is one way of looking at marriage. So we actually had to make a point of setting aside time. Now, we were quite fortunate because we had always done this in our relationship anyway, because I tend to be at football matches most weeknights and away at football matches at weekends, and football plays a very large part of my life. We'd already got to a stage of making Thursday night a regular date night, so it's really just a case of renewing it.
Yeah.
It can't be done all of the time, and the babysitter issues are an absolute minefield, isn't it?
It's expensive to go out on it. So you then sit there thinking, why are we wasting money on this when we can't string a conversation
together? It's like a 50% tax on your evening, in some cases 100% tax. You think about just a modest meal for two and a bottle of wine, maybe, I don't know, 30 to 40 quid. But if you're paying a babysitter £10 an hour as well, not to mention a taxi home for
absolutely.
Them.
I actually think the solution is not to go out on a date night just the two of you, but is to go out with friends. Because actually, if you go out with another couple, you're likely to not just spend all night talking about your baby.
You might have to talk about their baby.
Maybe. But, you know, it can be a bit more convivial. It takes that pressure off, like the pressure of looking across each other at a dinner table and going, this is our date night, we have to get on, and this has got to be great. It's almost like doomed to fail anyway, isn't it?
Just to go back to something you were saying about changing, sorting out the nappy bin, criticism. I mean, let's be honest, no one likes criticism. It doesn't matter whether you're a woman, a man, a mom or dad, whoever you are. Wouldn't it be better actually to try to bite some of that criticism back? I mean, would you ever criticise your partner, Ian, about the way she does
and live afterwards?
Well, no, I mean, but how do you think she'd approach criticising you?
She approaches it fearlessly. She's very good at it. She has a lot to work with, in fairness. Our problems were mainly derived from the fact that she was in an office and therefore couldn't do the things that she wanted to do and felt guilty that she wanted to do these things. And she knew I was in the home, so I would get lists sent to me, interminable lists of jobs and shopping lists. And, of course, I'm a freelance journalist, so at 10 in the morning I'm in my pants and sometimes her underwear, sat at her laptop desperately clattering out 1,500 words on the state of Manchester United in a particularly high-pressure part of my day. So we used to have an awful lot of arguments around there. It's like everything else, it's a kind of evolution of conflict that you have to get to a point where you realise that you don't want to get all the way to having a family meeting to discuss home economics, but you need to be able to know that there's a right time to communicate.
Thank you all very much for taking part. Really appreciate it. My thanks to Ian McIntosh, to Beverly Turner and to Katie Thompson. You can find them on Twitter. Well, certainly Ian and Beverly. It's at Beverly Turner and at Ian McIntosh, spelt I-A-I-N. I'm there as well, at Jane Garvey 1. And if you want Katie's services as a children's entertainer, go to catswhiskerstheatre.co.uk, and Cat is spelt with a K. If you like what you've heard today, share the podcast with your friends and fellow parents-to-be, and you can do that on Facebook, obviously. And you can find the rest of our episodes on iTunes and everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Jane Garvey. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the My Baby and Me podcast in association with Nook. Visit us at nook.co.uk.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.